Chapter 10. Grief. John Cosgrove was legendary among the kids at Middlesex Junior High for the pranks he'd play on teachers. This one time, John walked up to Mr. Trinkus, our eighth-grade science teacher, and moved his lips as if he were asking a question, but made no sound. Mr. Trinkus wore an old-fashioned hearing aid, and he assumed he couldn't hear John because it was set too low. So he said, "Wait a minute, son," turned up the dial, and John again moved his lips, this time letting out a slight whisper. Mr. Trinkus cranked up the volume on his hearing aid even higher, and then John screamed, "Mr. Trinkus, I just wanted to ask you!" We basically had to pull the poor old guy off the ceiling, he jumped so high. I was John's lab partner in science, and I sat with him in Mr. Klein's social studies class, too, as well as a few others. Along with my best friend Jim Cleaver, John and I managed the basketball team. I saw an awful lot of him every day. And then one day I didn't, because he died. I sat next to empty chairs for a few weeks and could feel the stares of the kids who'd barely known John and wondered what I knew about his death. We all had some vague understanding that he'd had an accident at home, and before long there were crazy stories going around. He'd been trying out a magic trick that had gone wrong, someone said to Jimmy. He must have been unhappy and killed himself, I was told over lunch. The kid who said that was bigger than me and swatted me away pretty easily when I took a swing at him. A girl whose mom was friends with a woman who once lived near the Cosgroves solemnly told our math class that she heard John was murdered. The rumors eventually died down, seating assignments got changed so that I didn't have to sit next to any more empty chairs, and most of the kids at Middlesex forgot about John. Except me. I couldn't. But where I'd been encouraged to talk about him by everyone for the first few weeks, suddenly it was clear that any mention of him made other kids uncomfortable. In the span of 1 month, the subject of John's death went from unavoidable to unmentionable. "Get over it," seemed to be the big theme whenever I tried to talk about it. So I found someone who had to listen. I went to a priest from my church. I told him about how much I hurt, how even watching certain TV shows made me sad because John and I used to talk about them, and how I felt changed in a way that made people not want to hang around with me. In response, the priest said, "We can't know why God would take someone so young. We have to have faith that God has a plan and that John has gone to be with his heavenly Father." Though I was asking how to cope with what had happened, the priest wanted to answer a different question. He wanted to explain why it had happened. I went home feeling even worse than before I'd gone to the church. It hadn't even occurred to me that God had taken John, but now I started to think about that too. Why would God want to pull a kid away from his family and friends? Grief is a two-headed monster. When someone you love dies, you feel the pain of losing them along with confusion over why they're gone. Either one of those feelings would be plenty to deal with on its own. Put loss and confusion together, and the whole thing can feel almost overwhelming. So most people look for answers, thinking that if they can only understand why someone has died, it would make the sense of loss a little easier to bear. That's exactly what I did some years after John's death, when my friend Heidi Craig flipped her car over while coming home from a summer job. She died a few days later. Heidi and I had gone to high school together, and we went to colleges just a few hours away from each other in the Midwest. When I hit a rough patch freshman year, it was Heidi who got in her car and came to visit, and when her love life had her in knots, which was often, it was my phone she rang for advice. I loved her dearly, from her goofy laugh to her beautiful eyes to her giant heart, all of which was taken away late on a weekday afternoon in a one-car accident on I-95. What sense did that make? What would God need with a college student? I went looking for answers. A minister in town told me roughly the same thing my priest had said years before. "We can't fully understand, blah, blah, blah. God has a plan, blah, blah, blah." I went back to school that fall, feeling a little more alone and just as confused about God's plan as ever. The fact that Heidi had died for no other reason than she hadn't bothered putting on her seatbelt gnawed at me. Was God punishing her carelessness, or did God make sure she didn't buckle up because it was her time? Heidi's death seemed so absurd that it started to make sense. I began to think about how silly it is to believe that there is some set time and date for each of us to die. If that were the case, why bother wearing seatbelts, or going to the doctor, or putting guardrails on mountain highways? I mean, if God's plan says it's time for you to go, then it's time for you to go, right?